As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome once again to The View from the Lane, the multi-award winning Tottenham Hotspur podcast from The Athletic. I'm Danny Kelly, joining me today from The Athletic, James Moore and Charlie Eccleshare. And on this episode of The View from the Lane, we'll discuss Spurs' amazing goal-scoring record, a whole raft of your very, very good and thought-provoking questions. Thanks in advance, those of you who sent those. And for those of you who didn't get your questions on, it's no reflection. They just weren't as good as the ones we're going to do. And we'll try and preview Wolves at home. Though previewing Spurs games, I think, is a mug's occupation these days. Who knows what's going to happen? Welcome aboard, everybody. Let's kick things off. First question is from the very famous Greg Jenner, massive Spurs fan. And in his own words, it's a pointless hypothetical. Greg says, Deki and Udogi are both left-footers who invert, but on opposite sides of the pitch and at different ends. If we swap Deki and Udogi's positions, Deki at left-back, Destiny at right-wing, but both cutting inside, who would adapt better to his new position?
I think Kulusevski would adapt better, or at least that it's typically easier for wingers to adapt to playing as a fullback than it is fullbacks to try and become wingers. I mean, I was always resistant, as James knows, the idea of Porro playing on the wing, which a lot of people wanted, because I think that's really hard for a fullback to do. So I think as a winger, you're asked to, like, Udogi's not really asked to beat players. He can do it. He's brilliant at doing it from deeper positions. But to receive the ball out wide, high up the pitch, cut in, beat a man, I think would be a big adaptation. Whereas, obviously, for Kulusevski, it would be an adaptation as well. But I think with Van de Ven next to him, as you know, if he were to be slightly out of position, you've got statistically the quickest player in the Premier League to help bail him out. So yeah,
and the word bail is important there.
It really is. That was going to be my segue, Danny.
Oh, absolutely. Because Udogi beats players in the, I'm not making a comparison yet. Udogi beats players in the bail manner, doesn't he? He doesn't dribble past them, he runs past them.
Here's some good news, because I am going to make that comparison. And in fact, I think I made that comparison in like September, when I suggested that Udogi may have a similar career trajectory as Bale, in as much as he'd go from left back to
Real Madrid,
being an attacking player, which would, I guess, mean potentially eventually playing on the right as an inverted winger. So I can see that. I mean, he doesn't have the sort of the finishing, I guess, that Bale kind of always had. So I suppose in a way you'd argue that wouldn't work as well. But for the purposes of being consistent in my opinion and also going against Charlie, which makes it more interesting, I will say Udogi as an inverted right winger.
The next question, thanks for that, Greg. The next question is from a beautifully named person, Tim Bershavays. I hope I've got that surname correct. And this is a really interesting question for me, because I've been working this podcast for two award-winning years now. And I don't know the answer to this, but you two, one is the person who sets up the working day, and you, James, Oberleutnant and Master, and the other is the person who does the actual graft, in the case of Charlie. And Tim would like to know, what does a typical non-match day look like for Charlie and Jack, it says here, and how do you decide who goes to the games? Well, James, I'll start with you. You have this immense raft, this plethora of talent at your disposal. How do you decide to deploy such riches?
Yeah, there definitely have been... I mean, generally, I should say, we do get two Spurs reporters and the reporter for the away team into our Spurs home game. So
one seat. They've got to be very small people, haven't they? Yeah.
Well, yeah. So generally, there aren't any arguments over who goes to home games that I can think of anyway. But there must... I hope Charlie and, of course, Jack don't mind me saying. There have definitely been a couple where there's been a bit of a disagreement on who should be going to an away game, haven't there, Charlie?
I can't think of many because generally...
Coward. You're a coward. Come on. I can't think which game.
I'll give him time to make up his excuses. Jace, are they arguing for the gig or against the gig?
It probably depends who the manager is and how old he is.
Fuck Burnley away.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about Burnley away, actually, specifically.
Right.
Because Charlie famously/infamously went to the Burnley away game in, when was that, like January 2022?
November 2021. They got snowed off.
Oh, sorry. It got snowed off in the midst of all the games being called off for Omicron, I think.
Omicron.
All right, mate. All right, science boy.
Get your Greek letters right.
yeah. What an insult, Charlie. Yeah, you can't even get the Greek words correct.
And then I had to go back up to... Basically, I had to go to Burnley twice that season. I guess were they both... Well, one was a Sunday and one was a midweek, I think.
I did the Sunday one. So got there and it was snowed off. And then Jack did the rearranged game.
Was that the infamous game where Sean Dyche went out in his in a t-shirt?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So games were getting called off for Omicron, but that was because of bad weather.
Yeah.
At the time, it was Conte's infamous rant. It's subsequently been superseded by other rants.
Yeah. More infamous rants. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Jack went to the rearranged game, which was in February. Yeah, of the Conte rant, of Conte rant fame or. Infamy.
Anyway, the long and short is since then, Charlie and I think Jack have both basically refused to go to Burnley. And I know Tim...
No!
Yes! Tim went this season, didn't he?
Tim went this season August. Because I booked a holiday in April that took in that weekend. And when the fixtures came out, I did... That was the... You know, normally you're like, oh, what's the first game you look at? Is it, you know, is it the North London Derby? Is it United or whatever?
When's Burnley away? I have to pretend I have a holiday.
And I... So I looked at
that. He was on
September.
Holiday in Bury, you know.
Yeah, so I looked at that September 2nd, 3rd weekend, whatever it was, and how delighted I was to see that it was probably the most... It is the most inconvenient away trip. It's like Newcastle, for instance, is really good in comparison. It's one train, it's quick.
Oh, and you also go up the lovely East Coast line. It's a lovely train ride as well.
Exactly.
Listen, before this becomes too barbed, let's return to the original question. What does a non-match day look like for Charlie? Very relaxed, I imagine. I see hammocks and cocktails.
Well, it depends. I mean, obviously, a press conference day is different as well because that sort of dominates the day. Otherwise, so the week starts with typically me, James and Jack will have a call, the three of us, work out what it is we want to do, and then get going on those pieces. And those pieces will involve making calls. They might involve watching clips on Y Scout. They might involve other kinds of research. And then obviously there's the writing element of it. So I'd say on a typical day, what I'm doing is calling contacts, calling someone specific, you know, and that would be for, you know, general chats. It might be calling people specifically for a piece. It might be, watching some clips and doing some writing and doing a podcast or two. So the days fill up very quickly. And because the pieces have to be sort of different and a bit more in depth, they do each require quite a bit of work. You have to be quite organized because you're always sort of trying to stay one step ahead so that you're never going into a week with sort of no ideas, because doing like three pieces a week all from scratch is really hard.
Okay. That's good to know. Next up is a person whose handle is based on a B-52 song. So hello, Rock Lobster 66. And he says, or she says, I have no idea, what do we need in terms of a puzzle piece to start killing teams off? Is it a clinical finisher, a more complete wide man, or a more incisive midfielder? We just seem to be lacking an ingredient. Loving the progress made so far, but wondering what is the thing that we're missing. I guess a simpler way of putting it, says Rock Clubs of 66, is if you were Johan Langer, Scott Munn, and Angie's shoes, if you're in those shoes, who would you be looking to sign in the summer, James?
I mean, I think the thing that it's felt like they missed the most probably is that kind of incisive midfield player, the player that can make the kind of killer pass to completely carve a team apart. And we know, obviously, James Maddison can do that. And if he's in the team, that clearly will massively help. But one, he is only one player. And two, he is a... I don't want to go as far as to say he's injury-prone, but he is probably a player who will have an injury a season on average. So he'll miss some games. So that would be the kind of player I think they probably need now. Like a central midfield playmaker who can kind of keep things ticking over, but also play the killer ball that will find... either someone like Son in space to score a goal, or one of the wide players to then play one of those balls across that we have seen so many times in the last few months as being like a kind of key tactic for Postecoglou Spurs.
Charlie, what do you think is the answer to a Rock Lobster 66 question?
I felt for a while that what I think they really need is a winger in the kind of Jeremy Doku mould, someone who can just get it, keep taking on their man, be really relentless in that way and kind of keep Spurs high up the pitch. I think one of the issues they've had is they don't really have that kind of player. And I think, and also talked about before, that they attacks often break down and, you know, things are very helter-skelter. I think having someone like him who can just really force a defence back could be really useful, and or someone who is just a bit better, we've spoken about this before, you know, then sort of Richarlison or Son are at keeping the ball, protecting it, bringing others into it, and just allowing Spurs to move up the pitch so that it's not quite so helter-skelter. But yeah, I do think, and that's what Antonio Nusa, who they looked at, he was in that kind of Doku mould. So I do think that's something they're going to look at in the summer.
Yeah, I've got an answer to this as well, but I think I'm going to leave actually, because it's actually a better answer to another question that's coming down the pipe. And it's always difficult, Rock Lobster 66, because everybody, as I say, has access to these databases now. And we often find ourselves discussing and yearning for players that none of us have really seen more than a few clips of on YouTube. And I think this is where the recruitment department of clubs has become so, so important. You know, every player is known to every club. Seeing something in them that they haven't perhaps been used to doing it at their other club, or finding a potential that can be fulfilled. That's the trick. At the moment, fingers crossed, Spurs are doing pretty well with it. This is the next question is from Neo Sapien, and they say, imagine a View from the Lane five-a-side team, and the squad is pretty thin. It's me, Jack, Charlie, James and Tim. Who plays where and who is the star player?
I would be amazed. And I don't want to do a disservice to anyone else. And I've never seen Charlie play football. But I'd be amazed if Charlie wasn't the best player on that team.
I'd be amazed too.
Feels incredibly unlikely to me.
I'm presuming, Neo Sapien, I'm allowed to talk about myself when I was not the crumbling remains of a once great beauty that you see before you today, but actually at my physical peak and playing football regularly. And I don't think there was ever a player less designed for five-a-side football than me. Now, believe me, I played for a long time and I enjoyed it, and I was in one or two decent teams where I was always the 11th best player. But the problem was big, very, very strong in my physical peak, and pretty quick over the ground. In my mind, therefore, I am Mickey van der Ven. In reality, I was Federico Fazio. And that's the truth of it. Angular, boned. Maybe I'm doing myself to service. I'm a better player than Fazio. Yeah, I was a better player than Fazio, even at professional level. Charlie, are you a good footballer?
Yeah, I'm all right. I find it really hard to answer because it's very relative. Even now when I play, some weeks I'll play and I'll be like, yeah, I've still got it. And then others I'll be like, oh, God, I'm really off the pace. But yeah, we had a game. We played a Spurs media against Spurs like media staff game.
Right.
At the training ground last year, which was a 4-4 draw, and then we won on penalties. It was a thriller. But none of the other View from the Lane lads join me on it. But yeah, it was good fun. Yeah, I've played 11 a side always. Mm. Really like 11 a side. Obviously played. Yeah,
11
is
better than 5, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah. I just think it's proper football. You get to kind of live out your dreams. 5 a side, I really enjoy, but it's less kind of serious and proper. Like 11 a side, I can remember so much. I can remember basically like all the goals, some assists. 5 a side, I don't really remember anything because it just didn't really mean as much, even though it's fun and easy to do, and easier to do, obviously. So yeah, I still get to play 11 a side now, not as regularly as I used to. But
James, I should make the point for those who can't see us that, you know, I'm a big man. James is a very big human being.
Thank you.
And some would say perhaps not shapely, suited physique wise for 5 a side. You need to be nearer the ground. You're a long way from the ground, my friend.
That is true. Yeah, if we're playing overhead height, then I'm
swaying. Yeah, if we're playing head tennis, you're the dude.
System. Yeah,
I did quite successfully play in goal in one 5-a-side tournament once, but this was in the Scouts.
Right.
Which, I was going to say that we do need
we'll
a keeper.
Place it in, I would say, the late 90s.
Very good. Well, I hope that helps. So it looks like I'm playing reading the game centre back, walking pace. Charlie's. I think I'd have to be in midfield, Charlie, because you need to get as many touches as possible. You can go in goal, James, and replicate those glory days. The final question before we have a break, and we will get back to the more serious, but they're all serious matters. These are great questions, thank you. This is a brilliant question from Chris B. And they say, if any of you could experience being one Spurs player, current, former, living or dead, for one memorable moment, who would it be and why?
I think Lucas Moura scoring that hat-trick in Amsterdam just for a... I can remember I scored a goal that won my Sunday League team, the top league in the Camden Sunday League. And it's one of the best moments of my life. And that was in front of no one and for zero stakes. So to multiply that by a million or however many, to do what Moura did, how good must that have felt? It's actually impossible to imagine, but probably close to ecstasy.
Okay, well, I've been thinking about it a lot, and I think I'd go back to the second leg of the 1984 UEFA Cup final against Anderlecht, where Spurs were behind in the game at home, and it was the second leg, deep into extra time, into normal time. As you remember, the game was won on penalties eventually, Tony Parks' save and all that. Graham Roberts was the kind of player I would like to have been, i.e. tough, but also really, really good. And he scored the most inconsequential-looking goal, bundling the ball over the line to send the stadium into a rapture that I can't remember. And I've seen Spurs, I've been lucky. I've seen them win lots of trophies and do lots of marvellous things. But that night, the stadium, the old stadium, of course, to say, you know, it's a cliche, but I'm going to say it. It was rocking, and I mean, I could feel the concrete under my feet because we were on the standing in those days. I could feel it moving under my feet. And to feel that wave of emotion for a player who was very popular but not a goal scorer, getting the goal back. And I was there with my brother, actually. He was a neutral on these matters. And I remember turning to him saying, Spurs have got this now. Whatever else happens, just the wave in the stadium made me new. For Graham to be at the centre of that, and I hope I have got it right. It was Graham, wasn't it? Someone look it up. That was absolutely a brilliant, brilliant moment. I would have loved that.
Right. I'm thinking a lot about Eric Lamella. And a couple of moments, really. The first, and I mentioned this on this podcast before, when he scored the fourth goal against Manchester City in 2015, September 2015, I think it was.
Yeah.
Where he took ages to go around the goalkeeper and score. And I've talked about having like this kind of out-of-body experience where I sort of thought I was going to pass out when all this was going on. It felt like it went on for about half an hour. I'd like to have experienced that from his end to see whether he was having sort of serious, similar issues. Also, then obviously you've got the two Rabona goals. Those would be pretty great moments. I mean, imagine what it feels like to score a goal like that. And best of all, obviously getting up in Jack Wilshere's face. And my loyalty to Eric Lamella is such that when, as a guy who scored a sort of Rabona for Hull last night against Rotherham, maybe? I don't know if any of you have seen that. In the Championship last night. We beat a couple of players and then did it from like the byline. And everyone on Twitter last night was going mad for this goal. But then there's like this sort of Zapruder film from another angle of like a massive deflection off the centre-back. It's actually just an own goal. So I was really happy that that was the case because I didn't want a better goal than Lamela's to have been scored.
You're listening to The View from the Lane. Thank you for those questions. We might get one or two more and we'll see if we can squeeze them in. Absolutely fascinating. Thanks very much indeed. You're listening to The View from the Lane. I'm Danny Kelly. And these are the great footballers of the day, James Moore and Charlie Eccleshare. They're with me too.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu.
Welcome back, everybody, to The View from the Lane. I'm Danny Kelly, Charlie Eccleshare, and James Moore are with me as well. A piece coming up in The Athletic this week about our captain Son and a certain fracker whilst away with the South Korea on international duty. We saw him where I think it's on his left hand and his two fingers were tied together for his most recent appearance because of some kind of dispute with his teammates. Charlie, you've got the inside track on this, I think.
Yeah, it's quite an amazing story. I mean, this sort of thing, you know, there are often disputes in international camps, but it doesn't really come out to quite this extent. But yeah, the night before South Korea played their Asia Cup semi-final against Jordan, which they went on to lose, there was an incident where a few of the younger players were kind of rushing through their dinner because they wanted to get off and play table tennis. And we're getting up to do so before the senior players had finished. Up they got. So Son was kind of like, what are you doing? And Lee Kang-in, who's 22 and one of the bigger names, but a kind of representative for the younger players, was like, what's the problem? It all escalated. Various players are piling in. Son, depending on who, you know, on who's telling of it, he was trying to break it up and he dislocated finger doing so. Lee was apparently pushed in the stomach. It sounded like it really got heated. And bearing in mind this was about more than just table tennis. It had kind of been brewing for the whole tournament and for weeks. You know, a perception from Son's side that a lot of the younger players weren't taking things seriously enough. I think from some of those younger players that they weren't really being taken seriously enough. And it's kind of a, you know, there's quite a clear hierarchy for a lot of these international teams and Korea is quite a hierarchical society generally. And, you know, I was speaking to someone who was saying that can be overstated a little bit. It's not quite how it was. But even so, generally, it's seen as pretty disrespectful to your elders to just get up before they finished. And not just elders, but senior players, you know, like Son,
also,
who is the captain.
You don't want to get indigestion before a big game.
Big game of table tennis.
Well, the semi-final of a major tournament. If you get indigestion the night before, then you're going to be knackered.
Yeah. So I think it felt... to Son like this was kind of more evidence they weren't really taking things particularly seriously. And yeah, it all kicked off. And then been reports that some of the squad wanted Lee not to play in the semi. That's been denied by others. He did, you know, and they obviously went on to lose. I mean, it sounds like a really, really unhappy camp. Clearly, you know, both with Klinsmann, there's a lot of unhappiness there, certainly from supporters. And then divisions amongst the players, and underpinning all of this, a sense that this was their best chance to win the Asia Cup for the first time since 1960.
Totally.
That was
totally
kind of being blown. So, yeah, it all kind of erupted in this big physical disagreement.
I mean, it's really interesting, Charlie, because, you know, on paper, Japan may have a deeper squad, but on paper, and again, I had experts reporting this back to me on Trans-Europe Express, that central spine of Kim Min-jae, Lee, who talked about their place for Paris Saint-Germain, and our own blessed Sonny, they had the most...
And Huang as well from Wolves.
Exactly, but down the middle of the team, they were unmatched in that. And the thought was if they play anything like, they should be, you know... And once Japan were knocked out, they were mad favourites for those games, the game that they lost. And it's interesting that there is a background to this now, because, of course, we all know from endless England camps, and no doubt someone will give me an example of a camp that was completely dysfunctional. They went on to win the trophy. By and large, international groups have to be together, otherwise they just don't make any progress. That's fascinating. Of course, it would have been, to use another kind of way of using the word, the most Spursy thing ever if after a month and a half of waiting for Son to come back, he'd got a broken wrist or something, in a fight over people wanted to go and play computer games or ping pong or whatever it was that they wanted to do.
And I did think that. It's like, lucky, imagine if he had actually... Because also, if he'd suffered an injury that ruled him out of the game, and then, you know, them having to obfuscate. What is an interesting element to this as well is that the Korean FA kind of quite happily confirmed this story, when I gather they're generally quite reluctant to do that sort of thing and like to keep quiet. And there are kind of differing theories on this. One is that they were happy for it to be out because it sort of draws attention from Klinsmann and his failings, because they want to keep him on. The other school of thought is that people who are unhappy with Klinsmann have leaked it and got it out because they're out to get him out. So, I mean, there's so much accusation and counter-accusation. And they play again on the 21st of March. I think it's against Thailand, a World Cup qualifier. So, I mean, there is a huge amount for Klinsmann, if he's still there, and if not, the Korean FA to resolve in just over a month.
Jürgen Klinsmann, of course, we had him on the podcast a while ago. He is a person who likes to see the glass half full. He is a happy bloke. He smiles a lot. And anyone who saw Son's interview after they went out of the tournament saw that we saw him as disconsolate as you ever see him. And this is because, again, in Korean society, if something is serious, you're supposed to look sad and serious about it.
Well, and he wasn't deemed to be serious enough. There was a lot of frustration that he was smiling, you know, seemingly by their standards, smiling and was fine about it.
Let's move on. Okay, this is the one I haven't got a clue here. This is from Danny THFC. If Vicario gets a blue card, they're not coming in. I put a stop to all that. I spoke to various people in the last 3 days. But if Vicario were to get this famous blue card, who are you putting in goal for those 10 minutes? Asks Danny.
I'm thinking now purely because this is like front of mind because of things that have happened in the last couple of weeks. But if we're going to see a goalkeeper bullied at corners, I wonder, I'm thinking Kulusevski because he's kind of... He's strong but also athletic, and I think he'd be quite good at kind of fending people off and going to get the ball.
Yeah, I thought for one dreadful moment you're going to put Christian Romero in goal there. That ain't going to work.
No, that feels like the maddest answer.
I might go Mickey van der Ven,
yeah,
given his height. Speed off his line. They can still play
true.
That high line,
yeah.
And you know he's gonna sweep.
Would you just have him as rush keeper?
Or just do monkey rush and everyone can go in. I mean, Harry Kane was obviously the answer to this previously, given his experience of doing it. But yeah, without him, I think I'd go Van der Ven, yeah.
I mean, but Kane was the answer to the question, if the answer to the question was whoever fancies themselves in goal. But Harry was no good, was he?
No.
That
we can say that now.
Well,
yeah. Oh, he was rubbish in goal. I suspect the person who would like to do it would be Madison. I bet he thinks he's really good in goal.
Yeah. Do you know what, actually, though? more grist to James's Kulusevski mill. When I interviewed Udogi, he was saying how Kulusevski is an amazing basketball player.
Oh, yeah.
So he's got that hand-eye coordination. So I think that's a good shout, actually.
Listen, thank you for all the questions, and we'll get more of them on, and they really were very, very good. Which takes us to next Saturday, 3 o'clock. There you go again, when Spurs take on Wolves. These home games for Spurs, to me, have the character of must-win about them.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, also Wolves, it's just broken that Cunha is out of the game and looks to be out for the whole season, which is
shame.
Oh, wow.
Really bad news for him, yeah, and for Wolves. But, you know, clearly that is advantageous to Spurs on the weekend. Yeah, I think it does have that feel in some ways. I mean, I've said for a while I thought Spurs, to me, look better than Aston Villa, and that's definitely been reinforced the last few weeks. I'm pretty confident Spurs will finish above Villa.
So you've just got Roy Keane and Gary Neville's prediction that Manchester United will hunt them down.
Yeah, I mean, Spurs are so much better than Manchester United. Like, how anyone can think, you know, Villa, to be fair, is as good a team as they've beaten away under Ten Hag. I mean, their away record's so bad. But yeah, I just think Spurs are a lot more coherent. I mean, you mentioned about bouncing from week to week. That, under Conte, United feel very similar to that. I know at the moment they're on a decent run. But yeah, so I'm pretty confident about Spurs. But yeah, if they want to maintain this momentum, be so good. If they can win this game and beat Palace in the next two games, the boost that would give them then going to Villa for that away game, who, by the way, have also lost players for the rest of the season, it sounds like. So, while at the same time Spurs' injury unavailability crisis has eased. I think it's a game that they really, really should be winning. And they owe Wolves. You know, Wolves have won three at the last four. And the last team that Spurs didn't score against in the Premier League, they're on this run of 36 straight.
It is an amazingly reassuring feeling, even when they go behind, as they did last week, that they will at least score.
Well, I've written a piece on the fact that, yeah, that if they score against Wolves, that's 37 straight, which is the second most consecutively ever by a Premier League
team. Arsenal still way over the horizon, aren't they?
Yeah. Arsenal 55. Yeah. Arsenal also the only team to do it all in one to do a whole season. But Spurs could do it. Yeah. I mean, Spurs will be on 37, so that would put them clear second. But yeah, on the scoring in every game this season, I wouldn't totally rule it out. Like, there've only been two games where they've in the whole run where they've been close not to doing it. They got a Kane 90th minute penalty in a defeat to Villa in May, and then obviously those two goals against Sheffield United. But under Ange, in 22 out of 24 league games, they've scored by the 61st minute. So they've been, you know, and in so many games
they've
scored.
They got three
more than
goals at Manchester City, you know, so all things are possible.
Yeah,
all
three goals at City with Hill and Højbjerg playing a half each in attacking roles, with all due respect.
What do you think about the issue for Spurs, I mean, with this Wolves game, James? And of course, we have ourselves in an unusual position here that because of the international call-ups, there's long suspensions, and I will never really understand how that tackle against his contemporary meant that Christian Romero missed 8.5% of the season for getting the ball. All right, maybe he did catch the bloke afterwards as well, but ridiculous that suspension. And of course, the return from long-term injuries and international duty means that Spurs, with these weeks off, should be gelling together better as a team as they head into these fixtures, which is not always the case as teams get tired at this time of the year. But James, we have to talk about Rodrigo, I think it's fair to say. Does Benton Kerr start against Wolves? In your mind only. You're not the manager. I get that.
I've come to accept that now.
Well, sometimes, yeah.
Begrudgingly. I mean, I would say possibly not. I suppose there are equivalent questions about the fitness of or sharpness of Bissouma. But if he's somewhere near peak condition then or nearer peak condition than Benton Kerr, then I would definitely suggest that might be a better option. I mean, Charlie wrote about this earlier in the week, and I was kind of half expecting him to get a bit of criticism when he tweeted it, but I think most people seem to kind of agree that it would be sensible to rotate him out. And I know that is a bit of a cop-out to use that phrase, but I think that is actually what we're talking about here, isn't it? We're talking about like resting him for a game rather than dropping him, really.
Yeah, I think, like said in the piece, the great thing is that Spurs are in a position where they can finally rotate really good players, you know, because they have replacements of a similar level. You know, it wouldn't be a big drop off. But Bissouma, we were talking about, is one of the best players in the Premier League for the early weeks. You know, whereas, I mean, that stat that did the rounds of like how few games Spurs have won without Kane and Son. What struck me was how few games they played without Kane and Son. I think it was 6 from Son's debut in 2015 to when he went away to the Asia Cup last month. I mean, that's incredible. And speaks to the fact that, yes, speaks to their durability, which is amazing, but also the fact that no manager could ever rest them, really. Whereas I think, you know, we've spoken about how Bentancur, the recovery will take a while. I don't think anyone's saying like, oh, he's played badly, get him out of the team. It's just, yeah, he might need a little rest. And we saw with Brennan Johnson how much he's benefited from not starting every game. And if, as James says, if Bissouma's fit, he can come in. And you know, it's a 16-player game nowadays, isn't it, with the 5 subs. How good to be able to bring Bentancur on potentially at half-time, 60 minutes, whenever you
want. One of the underlying themes of your piece was that medical people think it might be next season before we see Bentancur back to his absolute best. And of course, that the suggestion from that is you need a proper pre-season. You almost, you know, and I know recovery is not the same as pre-season. I know you're in the training ground every day, but it's not the same thing. And so if Bentancur becomes a squad player, an impact substitute, whatever it's going to be for a few games, nothing wrong with that. That is a lot better than looking down the line of players and thinking none of these are proven Premier League players. And I think I would start Bissouma, Saar and Maddison, because midfield in the modern game, with people coming from all angles and, you know, inverting all the rest of it, the midfield is all about balance now. It's not about the best three players you've got at the club. They have to be people who do the different jobs to a high level, you know. And I get into trouble calling people a defensive midfielder, but somebody who plays nearer to the defenders than the others. Bissouma, I think, before his fall fell away, he lost confidence after the sending off. Before that, I think he's the best at that. Saar covers the ground, and Maddison gives you the opportunity of a little bit of fairy dust on these forward-going moves, as well as obviously important to the spirit of the team. So I'd probably go with those three and see how they got on.
The other question, I guess, is, I don't know, we talked about this before the Brighton game as well, who misses out of, I guess, probably Richarlison, Werner and Son. I mean, I'm assuming most people would say, or certainly the two of you would say, Son should start now.
Yeah.
A dislocated finger or otherwise.
Yeah.
He was fine, but it didn't seem to affect him.
And Richarlison.
We know he's not going to have indigestion either. So
It'll be Werner. And again, there's a moment of loveliness about that, in that given his pace, and I know the other team's allowed to replace 5 players as well, but they tend not to replace the defenders. If he gets 25 minutes at the end of a game coming on against tiring athletes, his pace could become another 5% more critical.
He is an amazing player to bring off the bench.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. And he's not been on the bench. He's started all 5 of his Spurs appearances so far. So that will be another dimension. It will also be the first time that Bissouma, Maddison and Saar have played together, or certainly started. Actually, must be. Certainly started a game since the Chelsea one.
Thanks for mentioning the Chelsea thing. Because whatever else happens against Wolves, we can have a repeat of that. And it's been a joy. Thank you very, very much indeed, Charlie. Thank you very, very much indeed, James, who once again has risen from his slightly sick bed to help us out here on The View from the Lane. Thank you all for those questions, and thank you for listening. A reminder, as always, that the show has an official home on Twitter, or X, for those of you who are new, vftl@theathletic.com for your emails. And for the best Spurs coverage anywhere, again, I can say that with my hand on my heart, make sure you sign up to The Athletic itself. Take advantage of our latest offer of just $1.99 a month for 12 months. Simply go to theathletic.com/SpursPod to subscribe. See you all again early next week, and hopefully Spurs will have put another 3 points away in their race towards Champions League qualification. Let's hope so.
The Athletic.